Welcome to The James Rice Show, a humorous, entertaining, and sometimes thought-provoking look at teaching and studying abroad. Join the conversation as James guides you through his experiences and provides insights into how to improve your English and how to improve your teaching of English. And now, here's the man you've been waiting for, James Rice.
Coming up on this week's episode, Rethinking Learning with Barbara Bray. What is the future of learning? Plus, a very cool language conference in Malta, and the idiom of the week, and the history of English. All coming up on The James Rice Show. Hello, my class, and welcome to the James Rice Show this week. It is my pleasure to be coming to you from Toronto, Canada. I am the author and series creator of the Study It ESL textbooks, and Stephanie wants me to remind you that I was the first one-to-one iPad language school in the world. Yeah, thank you, Stephanie. Stephanie, the producer, who is behind the glass there, helping us out, making us sound very professional. At least the music and stuff sounds professional. I don't know if I sound so professional. Anyways, welcome, my students. It is fantastic for me to be here, and teachers as well. Love hearing from you teachers out there, and it is a great pleasure to welcome you. And this week, we are talking about what will learning be like in the 21st century? That is the challenge. And that is the question. And coming up on today's show, we will meet Barbara Bray, who discusses that very question in Teacher Talk. And Daniel Cherry is going to drop by, and he is organizing a really unique conference for language teaching. Daniel and Barbara are thinking about the 21st century, and you need to hear what they're saying. It is really fascinating. So what are those 21st century skills? Well, I've done a little research for you, my class, on what that is. And the answer is, it depends. It depends on which country you are in. In Canada, the 21st century skills that many employers and the future of Canada are looking for are critical thinking, so thinking critically about some topics, so doing a deeper understanding of things, collaboration means working together, and problem solving. These are the three main skills that Canada wants to discover and create from their school system. But in Brazil, it's different. It's communication, literacy, reading and writing, life skills, and critical thinking. So the Brazilian education system has a different thought about what 21st century skills need to be. In Peru, it's social skills, entrepreneurship, starting your own business, and communication. In China, it's collaboration, working together, creativity they want to develop, information technology, so that digital side, and problem solving. So the skills that you need for the 21st century will depend on what country you are from and what your government wants to focus on. Right or wrong, good or bad. But in today's world, the skills are more complex. And how we teach and learn the skills also need to be more complex. Applying what we teach and learn in the class to the real world, to what is happening out there in the real world, will become very, very important, in my opinion, anyways. You know, more project-based learning will become very, very important. So students, if you're out there looking for schools and thinking about what should you study or where should you study, all of that's fine. You can choose any path, but think about how that school is helping you to get real world experience. Okay. what are they doing to help you get that real world experience? And one of the things that we've talked about is virtual reality, when we talked about it a lot in the last couple of weeks. And it's a way to get students on field trips and out of the class without actually leaving the school. You don't have to leave the school. You can put the goggles on and you can go out into the world. So little things like that you can look for when you are trying to find a school. And then we have the digital skills. You know, your world, students who are younger, I guess, younger than me, your world will be 100% digital, okay? And skills such as digital literacy, digital safety, digital citizenship, that's a lot of that, those skills will need to be developed, all that digital stuff. And the biggest challenge, actually, there are three big challenges that we are facing in education today, in my opinion. And the first challenge is adapting schools to the 21st century. And that adapting of the schools has been much too slow, much too slow. For example, we are still using standardized tests for English, when what we could be doing is creating digital portfolios for students. I mean, imagine we could create digital portfolios starting in high school and then have them develop and change as we grow. And if you travel or study abroad, you can bring your portfolio to the new country and you can show your portfolio to the new school that you want to go to, or to the college or to the university that you want to go to, or to the job that you want to try to get. And that will show who you are as a whole person rather than how well your English is on one standardized test that you did one day in 2018, where you may have felt a little ill, or you were a little nervous, or a little sick. A digital portfolio is something that schools can teach you to create and build and add on to and create new things like a video resume, and that would be fantastic. But we're not thinking about that right now. We're not thinking about that, and that's a big problem that schools have. They're just too slow to develop some of these things. The second biggest challenge is the failure of the educational publishing industry and libraries to adapt to the digital world. It's way too slow, way too slow. Our study at ESL textbooks are still the only complete digital ESL textbook series on the market. We're the only ones out there. After 6 years of this technology being introduced, after we've won awards in New York and we've won awards in Dallas and we've won awards in Nashville, none of the other publishers have adapted to create digital textbooks for you, teachers, and students. None. That's unacceptable. That's unacceptable. The third biggest challenge is academic institutions at the higher level, you know, universities and colleges. Academic institutions and businesses, they both want the same thing. Universities want to produce employable graduates, and companies want to hire qualified individuals with the skills, the 21st century skills, that are needed. But these two groups, they're struggling to communicate with each other. And companies need to share with universities the skills that they're looking for, and they need to communicate better with those educational institutions and learn through partnership programs, through co-ops, through different things to help students get ready for the 21st century. Now, one of the skills that I know companies are looking for is creativity. Creativity. They want people to be creative. We're not only talking about like graphic design work or things like that, but just creative thinking, understanding that creative process. So I want you guys to meet up with Daniel Cherry, who is organizing a unique conference for language teachers.
We have with us Daniel Sherry, a lecturer at the Center for English Language Proficiency at the University of Malta. He chairs the ELT Council within the Ministry for Education and Employment in Malta. He has published over 100 publications, and he is organizing a very unique conference. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be part of this podcast.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about the conference you're organizing?
So this is a conference that focuses on visual arts creation. In fact, its full name is Visual Arts Creation and Language Education. It's a conference taking place in Malta, which is an island in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea, for those who are not so familiar with the country. The conference is taking place on the 15th and the 16th of February of 2019. And its aim is to bring together language educators, researchers, teachers of different kinds of languages who have an interest in the creation of the visual arts, either as people who do that kind of thing themselves, who create visual elements, visual arts, or else who engage the learners, the language learners, in the creation of the visual arts. And by the visual arts, what we mean are drawing, painting, design, crafts, photography, filmmaking, video making, computer art, and even gaming. So it's a conference that is targeting, as I've mentioned, individuals who are involved in this kind of thing. The key word being creation.
Yeah. Now, I absolutely love the idea, and it really jumped out when I saw your advertisement, because I've used filmmaking as a tool for many, many years as part of my classes. So can you tell us, who came up with the idea here? Was it something you thought of, or is there some research out there you've seen about this idea?
So the idea for the conference originated from a discussion that Kieran Donaghy and I were having after having organized the Image Conference in Malta a number of years ago. Kieran is the founder of the Image Conference, which is a conference that aims to look at the way that teachers engage their learners with different multimodal resources, but not necessarily in terms of creating multimodal resources, but engaging with readily available multimodal resources. And then we decided that we'd like to focus more specifically on the creative aspect of it, in terms of looking at what language teachers are doing when it comes to enabling their learners to position themselves as creative individuals in the sense of producing multimodal resources in the classroom and even outside of it. There's a lot of literature that focuses on helping learners to be creative in that sense. A lot of literature also on multimodal resources and how these can help to enhance learners' engagement. And we felt that this would be a good topic for the conference, especially since we're not aware of many other conferences that target specifically the creative aspect of the visual arts, the creative aspect in the sense of how learners produce visual arts and how teachers do so as well as part of language teaching or language education.
Yeah, absolutely. I've never heard of it. So that's fantastic. Have you yourself done anything with visual arts in your classrooms?
To be honest, most often what I do and what I did in the past when I used to work as a secondary school teacher was engaging learners with the visual arts in the sense that they're looking at stuff like drawings, the fine arts, visual poems, and that kind of thing. But we have explored ways of interpreting texts via the creation of video poems, for example, which would be an example of visual arts creation.
Now, how has been the response? What's the response like from teachers?
So far we've received a number of proposals from different countries, so teachers working in different countries. We're hoping to get many more proposals. We know that this is a bit of a niche topic, so there might not be many people doing this kind of thing in their classrooms and with their learners. but we're hoping to have a very good response by the end of the proposal period. The call for proposals closes on the 7th of December of 2018.
And when is the conference again?
The conference is on the 15th and the 16th of February of 2019.
Now, I can't get to Malta, although I would love to travel there. And I'm sure many of the teachers listening are in many, many different countries. So will it be live streamed or online later for us to watch it?
Unfortunately, no. Unfortunately, we don't have the resources and the funds to actually live stream that the conference. However, we'll be using Facebook Live to actually broadcast parts of the talks and workshops that will feature at this conference.
Okay.
The proposals that we're inviting are either for 45-minute workshops, which will involve a hands-on element, active audience participation, or else a 30-minute talk. So someone can opt for either a workshop or a talk depending on what kind of topic they'd like to focus on and what kind of stuff they'd like to talk about.
And is there a website or a Facebook page that they can visit?
Yes, it's the Visual Arts Creation website, and there's a link to the Google form where we're collecting responses. So perhaps the listeners to this podcast can access the link that will accompany the podcast.
Yes, absolutely. We'll definitely have a link on our website as well, so you guys can click through on that. Well, that's fantastic, and that's a wonderful, wonderful idea. And I wish you lots of success, and I hope that you'll come back and tell us how it goes.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much.
Thanks. All right. Thanks for telling us about it, Daniel.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
The Study It textbooks are the first ever completely digital and interactive English as a Second Language textbook series. Once downloaded, these textbooks do not require a Wi-Fi connection. Students and teachers can use them anywhere, anytime. Used in over 40 schools, universities, and NGOs worldwide. Study It is the future of English teaching. Visit www.studyitbooks.com for more information.
All right, welcome back to the James Rice Show. And that was Daniel Cherry. And he was talking about his language education conference called Visual Arts Creation in Language Education. Visual Arts Creation in Language Education. And the website where you can get more information is visualartscircle.com. Visualartscircle.com. And if you're in Malta, you got to go to this conference. I mean, it's fantastic. And like Daniel said, hopefully they'll stream it on Facebook. And I hope you can add some more information. So if you can follow Daniel, and I found him on LinkedIn. He's fantastic. So you could check him out on LinkedIn, Daniel Cherry, but it's spelled X-E-R-R-I, Daniel Cherry. So if you have a chance, connect with him on LinkedIn. Great idea. Really great. Now, next, we're coming up with Teacher Talk and Barbara Bray. You don't want to miss her. She's a fantastic lady, and she has her own podcast as well. So you can listen more to Barbara if you like what you hear. So she's fantastic. Coming up next.
Now it's time for Teacher Talk, James's thoughts and insights into teaching international students.
I'm pleased to welcome Miss Barbara Bray, a creative learning strategist at Rethinking Learning. She's also the host of a podcast called Conversations on Learning, and she is the co-author of Make Learning Personal and How to Personalize Learning. So check out her website, barbarabray.net. Welcome, Barbara.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Now, you also have a Twitter chat you're telling me about. Can you tell us a little bit about the Twitter chat?
Yes, it's every other Monday. It's 7 p.m. your time in Toronto, and it's only 30 minutes. It's three questions in 30 minutes, and it's around a topic that, you know, people tell us these really great topics. So next Monday, it's on empathy.
Nice. Very nice. Now, Barbara, you are in California.
I'm in Oakland, California, where today it's very unfortunately, smoky.
Yeah.
We have a lot of wildfires out here. It's very scary.
Yikes. All right. Well, you need some of our rain. We've been having a lot of rain.
Send it our way, please.
Yeah. Now, how did you get into podcasting?
Oh, well, let's see. I'm a writer. I love to write. And I was writing some blogs about, you know, different people. And I had mentioned to someone how I love the stories. And someone said, you know, you're a good interviewer. Why don't you take up podcasting? And that was about 2 years ago. And I kind of dabbled in it. And so I started it around May, a year and a half ago, I guess.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your podcast? Because it's fantastic. You've got to listen to it.
Oh, thank you so much. I am what you call a connector. I just know lots of different people through social media and conferences. And some people, when they tell me their stories, I just said, we need to have a conversation about that. And that's what it is about. I ask them, excuse me, just 1 second.
Yeah, no worries. We're having a short break here, everyone.
That's fine.
Answer that phone.
No, I'm not going to answer it. I get a lot of calls from, I don't know who they are, but they constantly call. And I turn off every phone, but I forgot my Apple Watch.
That's good. I'm glad you got an Apple Watch. That's good.
I love them.
I'm an Apple guy.
Yeah, good. Me too. So let's see. So I started with my son is my sound engineer. And
good.
So we practiced, you know, just the idea of how we were going to do this. I have a WordPress site and I thought, I just want to just kind of play with it. And so we did a practice and it turned out so good. I actually learned something new about my son, mainly by going through the conversations like you and I are doing right now and delving a little deeper. And so I just started reaching out to different people and I've been lucky. Everybody's been so generous with their time. And the big thing that's different is I also create a blog post to go with it. Each of the blogs, podcasts have a post that the guest and I work really hard to put in pictures and take excerpts from the podcast, put them in there. And if they have videos, TED Talks, anything like that, I try to put them up. So it's all about showcasing the people I'm talking to. And yeah, it's fun. I don't know if you've seen.
Yeah, it's fantastic. There's a lot of amazing information there. You know, I've done a little bit of research and saw a little bit of the work. It's fantastic. So I highly recommend everybody checking that out as well.
I have one more thing.
Yeah,
is
sure.
I'm also on VoiceEd Canada. I don't know if you know that.
Wow.
Yeah. Amazing. Stephen Hurley contacted me and said, hey, I like your show. Would you like to be on VoiceEd Canada? And I said, of course. So I've been there for about a year now.
Wow.
So I have one of the pages there and he shows I think it's every Tuesday and Thursday, he puts up some of my podcasts.
What have you learned by doing podcasts? Is there something that sort of sticks out in your mind, like an interview or something that maybe kind of changed your thinking, you know, because you've met some amazing people?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm learning how to become a better interviewer. I'm learning how to listen better. I'm not trying to think about what I'm going to say. I'm really trying to listen while they're talking. And I'll give you an example of one of them is Tom Murray, who's just an amazing person. And he did something where he would say, you know, Barbara, I really like da 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 da, you know, something like that. And he kept saying my name. And I went, that's clever. Because when he said my name, it piqued my brain and made me listen closer. So I turned that around now and I say, like, James, I really like what you're asking me. You know, I'm saying, so I'm really changing how I listen. And
that's a great tip for teachers because, you know, when you call on a student, if you call them by their name or even their nickname, mm-hmm. it can really, you know, that they get that sense of connection.
Well, especially if you look at high school, they have so many kids and they don't know the kids' names.
Sure, yeah.
It's really, really important to build those relationships first and find something special and be able to call it up and say, hey, I heard about your soccer game or something, you know, and how you did really good. You know, that sense of connection you make is so important. And yeah. I'm trying to do that myself. I'm going to get better. I find that I still make some mistakes, but that's how you learn.
Now, you are an expert on learning. So
I don't
what
know
is the future?
I don't know about an expert.
What is the future of learning?
Well, I do talk about that. Only because I'm asked, and to me, the future is here now, and we're not ready, and we're not preparing our students. And the idea is the future, because it's the fourth industrial revolution. You know about that, right?
Maybe you can share that with the teachers.
Okay. Well, what happened is when the first industrial revolution with steam and water, you know, came, everybody sure. said, "Oh, we're not." That's terrible. We're going to have railroads. They're going to be, you know, just ruin everything. And then the second, you know, was automobiles and things were going to change. And then the third was the computers. Well, now the fourth industrial revolution is AI, robots, embedded software, and bitcoins, and changing everything. Things are changing so fast. Just like, you know, the Amazon Go, as an example, they have one right in my town where you can go and you have your phone and you can walk in, take something off the shelf and walk out, and it automatically deducts it from your account. Right. There's no cashier. So what does that mean? There's no cashier. So that job is gone.
Right.
And there's so many jobs that are changing because of this new technology that we have to determine what's going to happen to our kids if they're still training for, you know, going to school for jobs that are no longer there.
Yeah.
We have to do something about that. And one of them is the skills. So it's not going to be, I mean, I'll just give you an example. I get resumes every week. I don't open them up. I'm not even looking at resumes anymore. I'm looking at skills. I needed to hire a sound editor, so I went to Upwork. Do you know about that?
Upwork? No. Tell us about that one.
Upwork is it's one of those applications where people can come in and say, these are the skills I have, these are the jobs I've done in my experience. And then they tie them to someone like me who was looking for a sound editor and someone who could
it's like a part-time kind of job.
It's a freelancer.
Freelancing.
But the power of it is so big because it's not by, I'm not looking at where they went to school. I'm looking at their skills.
Right.
But we have to teach like that now.
Now, are you for coding in the classroom? You know, reading, writing, coding?
Well, coding's like another language.
Yeah.
I learned how to code when computers just came in. See, I was a ed technologist. That's how I got started, kind of. I was a teacher, but I really loved computers. I took them apart and put them back together again. I'm like that real geeky person. Wow. You know? Yeah, I wanted to know. I learned how to develop databases, so I have my own program that I created, and I love that stuff. So I love coding, but that's because my brain works that way. Not everyone works that way. So if you start really young and you start with how to program, even using the spheros or, you know, some very simple way of understanding how you can move an object, it intrigues kids. They want to know more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I've certainly seen that in certainly some of the amazing elementary schools that are being developed out there.
But it's like another language.
Totally.
And it's universal. It works with anyone who speaks any language. They just need to know they need to be exposed to it and have some time to develop it.
Now, one of the things that I drew from your blogs was the joy of learning and how to bring that back. What would you say to new teachers who, you know, you've got kids in the ESL industry, they're adults, and, you know, they feel the pressure sometimes in high school. They want to go to a good university. For adults, they want to get a great job, and so they need to pass this standardized test. How do they bring that joy of learning to the classroom?
Well, not through standardized tests. some people are very excited when they do well. So it depends on your personality. But the thing that I find is I'm doing something new, which is called Define Your Why. If you know who you are and you know your strengths and you understand what your passions are, if you can have any way of exploring that passion and developing it, I don't care if you're a young kid or you're an adult looking for a job, but if you're working on your passion and you can be really excited about it, that's joy. And then you can share what you're doing. So like myself, I love to write and I want to push myself and become a better speaker. So I have to put myself out there. And, you know, it's not about one job anymore. It's about being the best you can be in whatever you are going to do. And so what are the skills are you going to need? How can you push yourself so you're a little bit out of your comfort zone and become better, whatever that means? And so let's say if you're a rock climber or some type of sport, push yourself, write about it, put a blog out there, tell about it, have a YouTube channel and tell about your process and have that so people see that you're passionate about something. Does that make sense? I mean, it's not just...
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
Not just taking a test and getting a grade. It's more than that.
But how would you talk to universities or companies who need... to validate somehow? I mean, we're talking English as a second language. How can I know that this person can speak English and can function?
Well, if let's just say that person is a rock climber and they made a video and they had to speak in English, all right? And they're doing, developing a recipe on something and had to do it in English. And they put that on their portfolio. I could hear them speaking English. If they had to write, have them write in English and then put it out there so it's available. Because what employers are doing now, they're going to social media. They're Googling you to find you. If everything is up there in a different language and you say you can speak it, but there's no evidence of it, put it out there.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm a big fan of are digital portfolios. And I would love to see more assessment tools using digital portfolios where you can see a growth, where you can have have that updated yearly, monthly as you're growing as a student, and companies kind of starting to request that. And actually, I think it would probably best to start in universities where you could ask for that type of assessment tool. It can be one part of it, and you can still have your standardized test because whatever they have a desire to have it. But the other part could be a digital portfolio.
Well, I think everyone should be doing them and starting them in very young. I don't know if you know what Reggio Emilia is. Have you ever heard of Reggio schools? They started in Italy after World War II, but they're basically doing portfolios, starting with preschool and collecting evidence of growth.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of it is, you know, you're taking a video, you're taking pictures, you're talking to the child. But if you start young and then this is something that you carry through K-12, then in the university, I'm actually in my program, it's called My E-Coach. That's another program I created. There is a group out of National University that uses my program to create portfolios. And I made that program mainly long ago before all these other tools, because I was working in Oakland Unified School District, we needed the teachers to have a place to put up their lessons, but also to put up artifacts and evidence. And
how can we make universities change?
How
can we make them see the light, Barbara?
A lot of them are starting to change because, one, they kind of have to. They're getting students not prepared. They're losing students who get very frustrated because, one, the costs are so high and they're not. Several students are dropping out saying, I could do this without school. So it's going to be like supply and demand. Down the road, they're going to have to because it's not going to be relevant anymore.
And I really feel that this needs to start at the university level. I think that is the best place for some of these new assessment tools to be used. Now, what do you think, what is your feeling, and you've talked to a lot of educators, about the mobile devices in the classroom?
Well, I think it's crazy not to have them because they're going to use them anyway outside. If we don't teach them the skills on how to use them correctly, they're going to use them inappropriately and get into trouble.
France is banning the devices, and there's a lot of schools that are going what's called no tech. So there's no technology in their schools. I'm hearing this phrase come out, and I'm just shocked.
Well, you're not preparing people for the real world. I mean, the problem is if you want to keep a traditional system where the teacher's all in control and everything is teacher directed, you're going to ban devices. But if you really want people to have a voice and know how to use resources appropriately, like primary sources and things like that, you're going to have to give them access to all the tools. But you're also going to have to give them strategies on how to use them effectively and be safe online also.
Well, yeah, safe and being a good digital citizen. I think there's a fear, though, or there's a lack, maybe not a fear from teachers, maybe there's a lack of teacher training. What is your, interviews and meeting with other teachers and educators, are they feeling that there's just not enough training in that ed tech world, or maybe there's just too much stuff?
Well, I think it's not only training, it's the amount of bureaucracy and mandates and lack of time. I'm just going to say this, to cover the curriculum, which drives me nuts, because that stuff they learn is necessary. If they spent more time teaching them how to use a device effectively, show them that what happens if they use it inappropriately, then they could teach the kids how to find the content, be less of this person standing up in front of the room telling them what they need to know and teaching them how to find the resources themselves. I mean, we're still, if the universities don't change, and many are starting to, they're starting to be more competency-based. They're starting to look at ways where people can even challenge a course. If we can make courses more project-based and more like challenges, I think MIT is looking at some of that those strategies where it's a real-life challenge. Some are using the UN goals, do you know about the UN Sustainable Development?
Please share that.
Oh, okay. This is really big, James.
Okay, all right, okay.
excuse me for a minute, I'm going to cough, though.
We're going to talk about the UN goals. All right.
These are the UN Sustainable Development Goals designed in 2015 by 197 countries, including Canada. They are available. If you did a search on UN SDGs, they'll come up. And the first one is to end poverty and no hunger.
Oh, I see.
Gender equality.
All right. Yeah. Those goals. Yeah.
Do you know about those?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Okay. Well, if you made everything you do around real problems, you can take a global problem and work on it locally.
Right.
So So, and everything can be tied into meeting the standards. You can have kids do, no matter what age, real world project-based learning or passion-based learning. If they know they can make a difference, every child wants to make a difference. Every person wants to make a difference, but they give up and they're in a compliance system. We just have to figure out ways we can change this, and that can happen in universities. No, it's just harder. It's just a little more difficult.
Yeah, for sure. I don't want to give anything too much away about you, Barbara, but you did mention before you were a grandmother, and I want to ask you, how have you maintained this passion that you have?
Oh, please.
I mean, a lot of teachers out there are going like, you know, I'm 20 years and I'm just burned out. I'm tired and I want to retire and I want to get out of the business. And, you know, how did you keep that passion going?
I don't know. I'm probably nuts. That's why. But my main thing is that I'm frustrated. I've been doing this for so long, trying to transform teaching and learning. And it seems like we went backwards during art in the United States. It was No Child Left Behind, which tended to leave poorer children behind and teachers behind, and it just didn't seem to work. So that's what kind of got me energized to do something and change things. So I'm kind of like I'm a disruptor, a radical, a little crazy, but I was like that as a teacher. And my main thing is, if I can make a difference, if I'm a good storyteller, if I can help people tell their stories and it helps change even one child or one teacher, I'll be happy. It's just, I guess that's just who I am. I just want to make a difference.
And let's leave it at that. I mean, that's a nice spot to end it. And you can hear more about Barbara and her podcast called Conversations on Learning. And it's on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and all of that.
I think they have it linked with Rethinking Learning Podcast. So if you did a search, or under my name. So, but I did call it Conversations on Learning, but.
Okay. But so we should search it as Rethinking Learning?
Yeah, I think the Rethinking Learning Podcast, I think, will come up.
Yeah, or Barbara Bray, B-R-A-Y, yeah. And it'll pop up as well. It's a great podcast, and you can get more of these fantastic insights with Barbara. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me here. This is wonderful.
Have you downloaded the Study It ESL textbooks yet for your classroom? The Study It textbooks are the first ever digital and interactive textbooks. Once downloaded, Wi-Fi is no longer required. Each book contains video and audio exercises, detailed grammar keynotes, reading and writing assignments, and amazing speaking projects. Grammar, conversation, pronunciation, business English, and listening textbooks are available. Visit www.studyitbooks.com for more information. It's time for James's Idiom of the Week.
So this week we are talking about rethinking learning, and in honor of the word learn, I thought we would study idioms that use the word learn. Now, there are some phrasal verbs with learn, two important ones, learn from and learn by. Learn from means to learn from someone or some experience. I learned from my dad how to ride a bike. Or learn by means to learn from an actual real-life experience. So we get better at English when we learn by doing, or learn by studying, or learn by example. All right, now, here are some important learn idioms. Number one, learn your lesson. All right, so this means to learn through a bad experience, not to do something, okay? Often your parents or your friends warn you, don't do that, but you do it anyways. I told you,
that you would feel terrible if you drank all that beer. I hope you learned your lesson, young man. Number two, learn something by heart. Learn something by heart. All right, so that means to memorize something. You've memorized it. So did you study for your grammar test last night, James? Yes, I learned everything by heart. So I memorized everything. Number three, learn the ropes. Learn the ropes, all right? This is a very common idiom, especially when we're talking about something you do on the job. So it's for job training or for teaching someone, all right? So James works hard at his podcast, but he took too much time to learn the ropes. I hope not. All right, another one. Learn the tricks of the trade. Learn the tricks of the trade. So there are certain skills or methods that professional people must use. And over time, you know, you have to learn those skills. And I have had to learn the tricks of the podcasting trade to become a better podcaster. All right. So I've learned the tricks of the trade to be a great podcaster. All right. So next one, last one, learn to live with. Learn to live with. So in this idiom, you get used to living with a bad or painful or unpleasant experience. All right. So for example, James, I'm sorry, your eyesight is getting worse. There's nothing more we can do. You're just getting old. You're going to have to learn to live with it. So that means my eyesight's getting bad and I have to wear glasses or contacts or something, and I have to learn to live with this problem, this painful problem or this kind of unpleasant problem of having bad eyesight. So my class, you need to learn The James Rice Show website by heart, www.thejamesriceshow.com, so you can learn from the many amazing people on the show. And if not, you will have to learn the ropes by yourself. And that is the idiom of the week.
Don't forget to follow James on Instagram at ConnectWithJames for fun photos and updates on future episodes.
Welcome to this week's Did You Know section, where we try to answer the question, why is English so crazy? Well, why is it crazy? Well, we only have to look at the history of English to understand why it's so crazy. English started as a mixture of dialects brought to England by a mix of Germans, Dutch, and Danes, known as the Anglo-Saxons, in the 5th century. Vikings invaded in the 9th and 10th centuries, and they brought their own language to England, and that was called the Old Norse. In the 11th century, the Norman conquest of England brought another heavy influence of Norman French. Norman is from Normandy. So they gave us the French language. And throughout this entire time, Latin was the official language of the Christian church. So all these countries mixed together created English, which is why English is so crazy. And now you know.
Have you subscribed to James's newsletter? When you subscribe, you will receive a free Study It ESL textbook. Visit www.thejamesriceshow.com for more information and join today.
Well, that was a jam-packed show, jam-packed. That means like there's a lot of stuff going on there. Yeah, I've been busy. I have been busy, my students and my teacher friends. So we're going to wrap up the show as we like to do from time to time and give a little James movie review. This past weekend, I was very lucky to enjoy Bohemian Rhapsody, the film about Queen and Freddie Mercury. If you haven't seen it, it is fantastic. It is one of the better movies out there. And get a chance to see it. Now, there is some controversy, and I'm not quite sure how I feel about it. I don't know if I should spoil it for you or not. So if you want to see it and, you know, you haven't seen it, maybe turn off the podcast now. If you have seen it, the controversy is around the fact that Freddie, the climax of the movie is Freddie and Queen singing at the Live Aid concert. And before the concert, he was told that he had AIDS. But in real life, and that led to the drama. That was a big drama, right? I mean, he had AIDS, and then he went on stage, and he gave the performance of a lifetime. But in real life, he gave the performance of a lifetime, and then 2 years later, he found out that he had AIDS. And so they played with the facts. It wasn't really truthful. It wasn't really honest. And when I was watching the movie, I didn't know that he had died 2 years later, or that not that he had died, but that he had been told 2 years after the Live Aid. So I was watching it, and I was very involved in the film. It was very emotional. And when I found out that he, you know, had AIDS 2 years after the show, the final show, you know, I kind of had a letdown. I was kind of disappointed. I thought, you know, you guys kind of cheated me in some way. Emotionally, I was cheated when I watched the film. So, you know, it kind of tempered my happiness because I really loved it when I came out. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was very, very emotional, very moving. And then I found out they lied to us. So I wonder how you guys feel. I wonder how you guys feel. Drop a comment. Let me know. Send a message. You know, I love to get your messages. I do read them. Sometimes I'm a little slow on responding, so I have messages out there. I know I haven't responded. But send a message along. Let me know how you feel about that Bohemian Rhapsody ending. And are you offended by that change in the facts? And that it's kind of a trick. They kind of tricked you into that emotion. What do you guys think? Let me know. And so Stephanie's saying, we got to wrap this up. You're talking too much this week. Yes, Stephanie, I'm very sorry. I had a lot to say this week. And thank you guys for staying with me. And the music is coming on. So remember, be crazy.
Thanks for listening to The James Rice Show. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter and send us your questions or comments at www.thejamesriceshow.com.